Hmm? Ah! Hmm.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Lizzie.
And this is What Is From, a show, a podcast dedicated to the show From on Epics. Today, we're going to be covering season one, episode five, Silhouettes. And I know I had a week off. So how you been?
I'm good. Barbie was great last week.
I know. I was, you know, so
when you podcast with someone for the first time, you don't know them, you're like, okay, don't know what I'm going to get. But she was fabulous.
Yes, she was. Awesome. And I love her passion for the show.
I'm just like, I don't belong here.
So that being said, what were your general thoughts on this episode? Silhouettes.
Of course I liked it.
Right.
Because I like them all. But if so far out of the five we've seen, this I didn't like as much, but I think I'm wrong when I say this, that I thought it was information light. I just think that there were a lot of nuances that I missed, that I think that 2 days later, looking at these notes, that I might be like, oh my God, how did I miss that?
I understand. I mean, I think the other one, the last episode that we talked about had some good information in it.
It had tons. Every one of them, there's been so much. You know, like it's almost been overload. Like, how can we get all this in?
This episode, although it did have not as much richness in terms of moving the story along, in terms of information about the town, I think, you know, we've got a couple of things that are going on that are maybe taking a detour, but is still getting us in the right direction, which I think we're going to talk about in a little bit. Because I mean, there was a lot, but like you said, it wasn't maybe the way we wanted it, but or the way we've been having it. I think that they're doing a lot more character development in this episode, which is nice because you get to learn a little bit more about people and why they're doing what they're doing. So that said, why don't you give us our first, where do you want to go? Where do you want to go on this one?
I am going to start with Jim and Jade, because I think what I've noticed is there's a lot of couples, so to speak, in these episodes where someone is either at opposite ends on the same thing or they're doing the same thing. And what I'm seeing is Jade is an engineer. He's a problem solver. Jim is an engineer. He's a problem solver. And Jim did something that I love, writing on walls when you are trying to problem solve. Like, write down every single thing you know, write down all your questions, and it starts to drive you in a direction. And I loved that about this episode. I wish we could have seen more of their questions. I think when it comes down to it, we just have three questions, and you know, Tabitha's is the most compelling and also the scariest. And the scariest because, is this another Lost?
Right.
So Jim is trying, he's starting to tackle the problem because there's something going on. They don't know what it is. And so he's starting his process. And on the same token, Jade is starting his process. He was presented with a problem. And that was when the radio static came on for a second and then went off. and he grabbed up that radio like it was his own personal talisman. And he's carrying it around. And it reminded me of, who's the diamond? Not Cartier. Tiffany. Not Tiffany. It'll come to me. One of the great diamond men.
Okay.
And what he would do is that he would carry around a raw diamond in his pocket. And he would wait until the diamond told him how to cut it.
Okay.
And so that's how I'm seeing Jade here. He's waiting for the inspiration to come through. And he's doing that by walking around with this radio. And he goes into the bar and he's a little bit manic. And, you know, he doesn't really fit in until he starts drinking the potato vodka, which is really gross. Mm-hmm. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And that's why everyone's in there. I was kind of surprised that everyone seemed as happy in there as they were. I would more expect people being upset and fighting, you know, because they're not happy about where they are and there's nothing they can do about their predicament.
Right.
So I don't know what the barman's name is.
Tom.
Tom? Okay.
Yes.
So he sits down and he and Tom are talking, and basically, you know, Tom is just the wall he's bouncing things off of. And they mentioned Schrodinger's cat. And
yes,
you know, I think a lot of people know what Schrodinger's cat is because of the Big Bang Theory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got my degree in chemistry. So me hearing Schrodinger's cat is not the first time. I have some Schrodinger's cat book that I don't think it's here, you know, in Atlanta with me, but you know, it was when my professor gave it to me when I graduated from college. He was like, you don't want that book. And then he gave me the book. So at any rate, and the principle is that you put the cat in the box and you put a lid on the box and you don't look in the box. To you, the cat can be dead or alive. You don't know what's going on inside the box. You don't know.
Right.
And it ties in closely with the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which is basically the more you know about something, the less you know about it.
And in this place, that's a great statement because
yeah.
The more we learn, it's like we have three other questions once we learn one piece of information.
Right. And, you know, we all know what an electron is. We know what an electron does, but in science, you never know at any given moment where an electron is. So you can know all you can about something and still be like, okay, what's up? So here we have two men that know a heck of a lot about stuff and how things work. And they're being presented with Schrodinger's cat and trying to figure out what it is they don't no. And they both approach it from two different directions that are somewhat the same. So I really, really liked this, you know, because like basically, you know, Jade is saying, we want to get out of here, but we have no idea where here is in order to get out of here. And
our other main character who's writing on the wall. Yeah, that's the first word. That's the first sentence. You know,
where are we?
Where are we? And from there, you know, the first thing that Jim says is writes that down. And now we can go from there.
Right.
All the questions come from there.
Yeah, exactly. I just, to me, I mean, I'm no great scientist. I do like to solve puzzles and stuff. I don't sit around all the time with a puzzle, but I do look at things and say, all right, here's all my knowns. What are my unknowns? And I try to go from there. Although my life is a failure.
Yeah, you know, get
look
line.
At some stuff.
Get in line. No, yeah, but I think you know you do make a point there that they're trying to go backwards.
Yeah, because they're trying if like reverse engineering. Like for instance, if alien spaceships had landed in Roswell. And remember the movie Independence Day?
Yes.
And they reversed engineered the spaceship, trying to figure out what it did. But the thing was, there were tons of things about that spaceship they couldn't know about because the power wasn't on. And then, you know, when all the bigger spaceships start showing up all around the world, the power starts zipping on and they learn so much more.
Right.
So that's what, you know, that's their issue. That's what they're doing. What's your number one?
It can go so many different ways. You know, going back to your point about Jade, I love one of the statements that he says. He's like, I'm not the person eating the cheese. I'm the one that makes the maize.
Yeah.
And
I place the cheese.
And I love how you associate those two guys together because they're really trying to go through their own stages of grieving and being in this place. And I look at what he does when he's in the bar and he's like, why aren't you people like trying to do stuff? Well, you know, they've been here for months, years, whatever. Yeah. There's only so much fight that you can do.
I mean, maybe they never tried, you know,
maybe.
Because think about it. Like they had all day long to solve the hiding problem. And, you know, before the talismans, you know,
right.
And we don't know that they did work on that problem or not. Maybe they didn't, but we know those people in the bar are not working on any problems other than drowning themselves so that they forget where they are.
Or they have other jobs in the town. Yes. But you're right. They're not looking to get themselves out anytime soon.
Yeah.
You know, what I do like about this show is the first recap of every episode, they really put you in the right place. So even if they don't talk about that person the episode before, they really put you into that place. Yeah. And I love the fact how they start right where they stopped. So my first thing is Nathan and Sarah. Sarah goes down, she's in her state after she sees the scariest thing on her arm, kill the boy, which of course she tells no one other than Nathan.
Yeah.
They go and get him. She's in the infirmary. And I like that scene between the two women. We learn some information, you know,
about Christy.
Christy's engaged to a woman. And I think, even though she is engaged to her, she does have serious feelings for Kenny. It seems. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be.
I mean, she's saying that they're just friends. You never see them kiss, but you do see them embrace. And friends embrace.
We'll be right back.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4-6 Success Filmmaking. 4-6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4-6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
But I think she also said the reason why I've only been here for a couple of months, I'm still holding hope out,
yeah,
all that.
She's still engaged. She's a taken woman. So as far as she's concerned, she can only go so far. But Kenny is a different story.
Right.
As far as we know, he's available.
Right. And they are kind of smitten with each other, so to speak.
There's something going on.
There's something definitely going on. I love the creepy conversation that they had about if you could get back, what would you do? And all, and I know most of the viewers as well as I is saying, don't say that to Christy.
It's like you're walking into a trap.
You're walking right into a trap. And I love how at the end of the night, she's like, oh, we need another girls like this again. And we're like, oh, geez.
Yeah, but Christy doesn't know.
Oh, I know. It's just, it's like, great. It's great because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I love how I think there's something creepy going on with Nathan and Sarah. And the reason I say that is because she talked about her father or a boyfriend or something.
It was a boyfriend.
And it just seemed like it got a little too weird. And the way
it
she
made sense until it didn't.
Yeah. And she said, you know, I really love you. And it just seemed really kind of creepy. Now, again, I could be off base on that, but at the same time, it was just a little too creepy with me. And, you know, I just want to continue that whole storyline of Sarah, because I think that's what my point is. I mean, we're going to end up recapping all the little scenes anyways. So, you know, she goes on the whirly thing with Ethan, and that was a weird scene how they just focused in on her and it got a little too wacky.
It was strange. It was just odd.
It was, the whole thing was odd. And of course, you know, they're asking her how she's doing. Oh, we're running tests, da, 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 knowing full well she knows what's going on. And then I love how disappointed she was when Tabitha said, oh, I'm gonna come.
Foiled.
But of course she's gonna come. I mean, I know she's a nice girl and all, but you know, Tabitha still was learning the lay of the land. And I thought it was pretty ingenious of Sarah to kind of stick her into that closet, which actually gave us some more information as well, which is that there are those type of things around the town. There are these little hiding places.
Possibly. I mean, we don't know that really was one of the hiding places, because you'd have to be able to lock it from the inside.
Right.
Then again, we saw them go right through the wood on the sides of the box.
True. The
wood's not enough to... You know, it's a matter, I wonder if it's just a matter of staying out of sight. We don't know if these things have heightened smell or anything like that, or some kind of sensory.
Now, what was kind of interesting about this episode, we didn't see any monsters, did we?
No, not one.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Well, we did. It was just Sarah. And then, of course, Nathan is trying to do his damnedest to try to put all this together.
Yeah.
And he goes to the priest, and then the priest, you know, Father Khatri finally figures out what's happening, and then it all comes full circle.
Yeah.
You know, that whole storyline, I just find really fascinating. You know, we could talk about why she's getting that sense from the monsters, where is that coming from, all that. But I know, you know, Jim has been on edge a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he threatened Victor and.
Yeah, but I would have threatened Victor.
But no, that was my point. Yeah. I know people are like, oh, he's got an issue. I would do the same damn thing if somebody was around my kid that was creepy or.
But they don't see her as creepy.
I'm talking about Victor. And then you have Sarah, and it's like, Harold, what the hell is going on here? This is supposed to be Mayberry, and it's turning into, you know, Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, because basically Victor is the safe one and she's not.
I know.
So it's like saying looks are deceptive.
and I just love the juxtaposition that they're doing with this writing. But yeah, I mean, my first point, I guess, is Sarah's storyline. And how she really weaved herself from being the sweetheart of the place to public enemy number one in about, you know, a half an episode.
Yeah. Well, so, I'm sorry. Am I cutting you off?
No, you're not at all. So let me hear your number two.
All right. I'm just going to bounce right off of that because we've got this Nathan and Sarah thing going on, and Nathan is sitting at the table and he's got Sarah's dress and he's looking at her dress.
Yes.
And I had to go back to make sure it was the same dress that she was wearing when she killed Toby. And it was. And, you know, it's got blood all in the front of it. And he's like looking at it in disbelief. Like, what's going on? He knows there's something more going on. And she has shared with him part of what's going on with her, that, you know, these voices are telling her to do things, you know. And when she's telling him about Ethan, he is not really on board with that.
Hello. Yes. It's like, why are you trying to kill somebody? Yeah. There's no need for that.
Yeah. You know, and we can tell from whatever she's wearing, she favors floral patterns. So it's kind of like young and innocent, you know, they're not in reds. It's all soft pastel tones. And so it makes her look innocuous, like she's safe.
Like, absolutely. I mean, she's as sweet as sugar.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone thinks that. And to some extent she is, but what I'm getting from her is more femme fatale, because after a certain point, like, she's telling us the story about how she had a boyfriend and it was really bad and she had to get away from him. And then Nathan comes and Nathan is all she has, you know, and things were really bad. And then Nathan saved her. And then when she told him that she loved him, it didn't sound like a sister to a brother. And
yes,
it made me ask the question, is he really her brother? Or is it something they are just saying? Because
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound right. And, you know, then when he ends up getting killed, I'm like, wait a minute, how are we going to find out? You know, like, he's the one that can expose her. She didn't kill him on purpose.
No.
No, he just came up behind her and, you know, it was his, you know, unlucky day. But, and she's genuinely distraught over having killed him. But she can't convince anyone that it's okay to do one really bad thing if it results in a bunch of good things.
Well, what's interesting about her situation is this, and everybody can relate to this. When you are trying to get the answer you want and nobody is giving you that answer, you're going to go to everybody and their brother until you get that right answer.
Right.
And I think that's the kind of situation that she's in. But it'll be interesting to see what Nathan did tell Father Kadri on this, how much he got into detail. And regardless of that, they're going to find the dress. They're going to search that house. They're going to try to figure out what's going on. And I think that they may not find out that she opened the door, but I think pieces are going to start falling into her direction. I think Father Kadri hopefully got more information from Nathan than we think. You know, hopefully it wasn't just, oh, she's out to kill the kid. Hopefully it was more than that, that the monsters are talking to her. So anything else on that point?
I don't think so. I think that nails that one shut.
Wonderful.
My
next point, whatever you want to call it, is going to Colony House, where, you know, Julie is not in a happy place.
Yeah.
She's writing her list of people that would miss her. I don't know if I would have thought of that. I know they should, Fatima says that's what everybody ends up doing.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would have done that, but that's here or there.
How many times have you gone missing?
Well, I'm sorry?
How many times have you gone missing?
I can't really talk about it.
Okay.
Because
it's never occurred to you.
I never really would have thought to do that. But, you know, that's a podcast for another time.
Okay.
That's the True Crimes podcast that's going to be next season on Podcastera. Now, okay. That said, I really love that Fatima could see the problems. And she's a pretty... she's a pretty...
Intuitive?
Intuitive, but she's just got that thing about her. She just knows things, and I just find it amazing. And I love that she just tells Ellis, you know what? We're not working today. We're going to have a fun day. And they bring her to the lake.
They call it the Brundles.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, you know, where they get the name from.
And Julie didn't tell her parents about it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's almost like it feels like what happens in Colony House stays in Colony House.
Yes.
And I just, you know, they're jumping into the water in this super creepy place. I mean, I don't swim in lakes anymore because you can't always see the bottom of the lake. And right. I don't know what's down there. It could be anything. And you know, I blame Friday the 13th for that.
Okay.
It's never been the same.
You know what? I had a beach house growing up, and I've never been a strong swimmer. And I've watched Jaws, and forget Friday the 13th. Ever since Jaws, it's like I'm just, you know, I just don't want it. But that said, I love how she explains her story. She's a Middle Eastern woman, a girl from Iraq. Her parents were taken and there was a lot of fighting going on. And she talks about the silhouettes, which this is named after. I just find every time that she's on the screen, the actress is just, all eyes are on her.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me. I just find that she's got that thing.
She does have something, and I don't know if it's the actress or the character. Like, the character makes you want to hang out with her.
Absolutely.
Like, you want to spend time with her. She makes you feel safe.
But I will say this, I mean, and you've been in the industry long enough, two people could be the same character, and one could win an Academy Award and the other could be a dud. And I think that she doesn't have a lot of credits to her name on the IMDb, but I bet you she ends up becoming some kind of bigger star, I hope. Or we can say we knew her when.
Yeah.
And I do love the relationship that her and Julie have. It's like a sisterly, motherly thing going on. And I think that's exactly what Julie needs. She's in that one part of her life where it's very confusing, and she's just trying to find her way. And she needs someone that's adult enough to be responsible for her, but young enough to understand. And I think that's where she fits in, Fatima.
Yeah.
There is one other thing that really doesn't have to do with those two, but it was the funniest scene in the whole entire thing. When Jade's walking around with his radio, and I just want to make sure I get her name right.
Trudy
comes up to him and she's like, hey, and she starts talking to him. And I got to make sure I get the line right. Oh, where is it? Oh,
she was an alabaster.
Yes, unicorn. I would have mounted you like an alabaster.
An alabaster unicorn.
Yes. And she's just too friggin' much. You know, this is the same person that loves to steal stuff. And
I think she's own. A hoarder.
Yeah, she's the hoarder.
And I think that's what her job is.
And she was looking pretty good. So
at that moment, yeah. And you know, like last week I mentioned the engineer joke, but you know, she says he's way cuter awake. Yes. And you know, and she would have sexed him up real good. And he's just like, I got my radio, I've got a problem to solve. And it just reminds me of the engineer joke where this engineer is walking down the street and he hears this voice saying, help me, help me. And he right. looks around and he's like, he doesn't see anything, keeps walking. He's like, please help me. And he goes back and it's a frog.
Right.
And have you heard this joke?
No.
Oh, okay. So it's a frog. And so the frog says, please kiss me so that I can become a person again. And the engineer is like, nah, I don't think so. I might get a wart or something. And the frog is like, please kiss me. I will be your girlfriend for the rest of your life. And, you know, there's more into that, trying to convince this guy to kiss her. But he's like, no, he's like, I'm an engineer. I don't have time for girlfriends, but a talking frog, that's pretty cool. And that's how Jade looked at her.
Absolutely. So was that mine or yours? I think that was mine.
That was
so
yours.
What is your next one?
Sorry about the coughing. There isn't a cough button on this thing.
You can use the mute. You can, if you click on the mute, the little microphone. No, on the screen itself.
Oh, okay.
You can do it that way if you want.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to piggyback right on there and go back to Fatima. And she's telling the story of when she was 11 and living in Iran. And she is struck by how fast a mood can change. They were having dinner. Everyone's laughing. The father's telling stories and like really big belly laughs, which I haven't had a good one in a long time. Long time. I am overdue. But at any rate, her father was an outspoken cleric, which is something you never want to be in Iran.
You never want to be that in any story. It never works out.
You don't
want to
be the outspoken cleric. Some gunmen come to the door and, you know, she's seeing her father at the door and he's a silhouette. All of a sudden, all detail, everything about him becomes just a shape. And then the shape falls, the silhouette falls, and her father is dead. And she manages, you know, to get out of Iran and ends up worse. We don't know where. We don't know where she was coming from. That one hasn't come up. But somehow she ends up in America and ends up in this place. And the lesson is that no matter where you are, there's monsters. You know, they're just wearing different masks. They do different things, but there's always monsters. The reason why I bring this up is this is going back to the last time you and I podcasted. We are trying to tie together a commonality between people. And we've got Boyd feeling grief. We've got the Matthews family feeling grief. Now we've got Fatima having a very big grief issue, you know, because we don't know Boyd's wife dies, but obviously she dies there. So we don't know the circumstances of that, but we do know the circumstances of Thomas. And we know how heavily that family is carrying that grief. So Fatima's grief fits in with that pretty well. And that's the end of mine.
Great.
So you're number three.
My number three-ish. I know, right?
Are you still there? Oh, this doesn't sound good. Let's see. Where are you? Oh, okay. I had to put the camera back on. I'll just move this aside.
My charger. I needed my charger. That was the problem.
Oh, okay. It wasn't your cough button.
No.
Okay.
My next one really, it's not as sexy as the ones that we've been talking about, but what I do find interesting is that they do kind of check in with a lot of the different characters, even though they're not there, they still kind of bring them up. And that just goes back to good writing.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of an interesting thing. I think also one of the things that they brought up, which I find really fascinating, is they brought up Boyd's wife. So he goes and sees her. Her name is Abby. And I guess they came together. Something had happened where they were together and now the family is split up. She died. But I love how he's talking to his wife about, you know, swinging for the fences and looking for a sign and doing something crazy, and that she's the level-headed one. And, you know, that's the good stuff that you have with relationships. And I think that's one of the few times that Boyd actually kind of lets his hair down, so to speak. Because in this world, it's very tense. You know, you've got Jade who's running around with a radio. You've got, you know, Jim who's writing stuff on the walls to everybody else is just kind of living and doing their thing. And I think that's one of Boyd's releases is going to see his wife. And it's been a while since that. He kind of filled her in on everything. So it was a nice little recap. So Boyd has his wife's tombstone. And they've got the lake, or what is it called again? I'm sorry.
The Brundles.
The Brundles for the colony house. And again, I don't think that it's a huge entire point, but I think it's important because Boyd is developing as a character. He's just not the sheriff. He is really trying to keep this fragile glass house together. And it's really starting to crumble. I mean, they said everything was good for months, 90 days or something around there. And now within a week or even not even within a week, I'm assuming this is a couple of days, all hell's broke loose. So, you know, that's the one thing that I thought was a kind of neat thing. You're trying to get yourself centered. You go see your wife, whether she's dead or alive at this point, you know, to kind of talk to that level-headed person in your life. So my next point was Boyd.
All right. I think I came off with one too many points, but I'm just going to ask or point this out. And this is a quick one. Father Cautry, when Nathan comes upon him, he's sitting within a ring of stones, of standing stones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is all of that about? Because from the looks of it, you know, Father Cautry is clergy.
Right.
And he's sitting within a ring of stones. And it's just making me wonder what those stones are all about. Why is there a ring of stones like that? I mean, growing up in the Northeast, we heard a lot about the glaciers melting and, you know, in the last ice age and,
right.
You know, giant rocks being, you know, pushed down over the continent. And, you know, they stopped where they stopped. That's that's what happened. And, you know, Massachusetts, well, New Hampshire is very rocky, but, you know, you'll have all these large stone outcroppings and big rocks, big boulders. And, you know, the further south I go, the less I see of that. Every once in a while, you'll see a random one. And this is on the East Coast, just so everyone knows what I'm talking about. So to see a random ring of standing stones, it's pretty impossible. I mean, anything is possible. It just may take longer, you know, and more strenuous, you know, circumstances for something to just happen. But right. the chances of stones standing up like that in a circle are really, really infinitesimal.
It's funny that you should mention that because I actually had a couple of theories on this.
Okay.
And I'm saying this wink, wink. First off, they could be looking for witches. I'm saying this jokingly, you know, because you're from Massachusetts, you know, it could be a Salem deal. They could be putting
the Salem witch trials.
They could just be putting rocks for a nice rose bush. You know, I'm saying this completely tongue in cheek.
Okay.
Could be a really big campfire. I understand where you're coming from and it makes perfect sense. Like what is going on? And I, to your point, he knows more than we have been told yet.
Right.
And I think they all know a little bit more than they're leading on to. And I think there's right. characters that we haven't met yet that have some pieces to the puzzle. Going back to that point, I'm sorry. I didn't want to cut you off with that. Was there anything else?
No, I mean, the only thing I was going to do was compare it to Stonehenge, you know, that there's
exactly,
there's a purpose for this arrangement. So, and even Outlander, there's a ring of stones and those stones are powered, you know,
right.
the time travel. So, that's all I'm saying. Like, what's up with those stones? Why is the clergyman sitting within the ring of stones?
Well, and I keep going back to this. I know it's the writers of Lost, and Lost has had the one negative rap to them is they like to just not finish storylines.
Yeah.
And I hope that that's not the case. I hope that they can put a bow on all the major things that we need to look at. So hopefully we do find out a little bit more about that. My next and final one for my notes is Jim's wall. Okay.
Okay.
And this is the one thing that was kind of bothering me about the wall.
Okay.
Why the heck haven't they thought of this already? Like, what I mean by that is this. Meaning this. Why haven't they said, okay, you're new. This is what we know so far in front of us. What do you have to bring to the, you know what I mean? Like, you would think that they all talk and write it out to make it so it's.
Well, I think maybe there's several things going on. I mean, they do tell them the basics. It seems
I get that.
Donna, you know, goes the horror movie route.
You think?
Where Boyd, you know, is like, here's the cliff notes, you know? And so.
But you would think, though.
That they would come together as a group.
Right.
And
the reason I say this is because every survivor has the same questions.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Why am I here? Where are we? How do we get home? Yeah. And if you, you know, if you take Jim's theory for a hot second and say, okay, this is our board of knowledge, so to speak. And they kind of have that with the pin placements of where everybody is around the country or world or whatever.
So obviously Boyd and Kenny have been doing some problem solving based on that. Like they've started that process.
Correct.
Because they're keeping track. But I think the answer, I think there's a multitude of answers, because why are those people just sitting in the bar? Why aren't they belligerent and unhappy and miserable instead of just being okay? Like, I don't know if, well, I do know. I mean, I've done background. You know, they tell you how they want you to behave. Why right. are they sitting there quietly looking like they're having a good time? Because they're not from Colony House. Because right, Colony from, House is doing their thing up on the hill.
And that's from the town.
Colony House's mentality. It's like, we are living for today. So these guys are living down in the town where we're like, we're living by the rules. And this is how we will survive.
Right.
You know, and kind of like, we're just trying to get through each day.
I will say this, though.
Yeah.
I think both houses, they do one thing that helps people be sane, which is I think they give people purpose.
Yeah.
And I think if you're doing your job, then I don't care where you're at. You may not be as likely to be as belligerent or whatever. You look at the barkeep. He's like, we don't need a gas station. We need a bar. I'm a philosophy guy and I turn into a bartender. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now, like you said, what I love about it is Colony House does it one way. The town does it another. The town has a diner that everybody eats at versus the Colony House, which probably has
cans of peaches
and all the pickled fruit that you'd ever want.
I mean, they grow their own vegetables
and there's just a lot that's going on there. I think that the more that they show, I think it'll be an onion. We're going to start pulling off layers like Sarah.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep pulling off layers and find out, you know, we still haven't really seen what Victor's all about. I'm just using him as an example. Yes, we learned a lot about Victor, but what's going on with him and the white kid, the kid in white, and how does that relate to Ethan? I'm just throwing out other questions that we're trying to solve. And I just find it really fascinating that they throw something out there and they might go back and forth. You know what I mean? So this week it's this group of people. Next week we'll go back and we'll go back and forth. But they do it in a way that is not compartmentalized. Thank you.
Don't you hate that?
Yes, I do.
Idiosyncrasy was my word for many, many years.
So, couldn't do it. I still can't say it.
Compartmentalized. You just have to.
We're going to just have carpaccio with our compartmentalized whatever. No, but the one thing I will say, I mean, and this is during the COVID era, you know, they filmed during COVID.
Yeah.
The fact that they weren't, if they were, it didn't seem like bottle episodes. It wasn't.
All hands on deck.
But they still, whether it was the writing or the way they acted or whatever, they still acted as though everybody was in the town. Everybody was doing everything. And like even that scene where they find Nathan in the farm to get him.
Yeah.
Some random black lady comes up and tells them that we may not know who she is, but it just proves that there's other people in this town and there's people walking around. And I find it, you know, my thirst isn't quenched yet. Not even close. Yeah. And that's what's so nice. And I just think that that's where I love where it's going. And we're just learning more about this town / Colony House every episode. So what's your last or other points that you have?
All right. Well, I did want to, we didn't talk about the three questions that we do know. And
okay.
The first question was from Jim, where are we? And then everything is stemming from there. Ethan's question is there anyone trying to help? You know, a kid's question is, you know, are we alone? And then Tabitha had a question that she was afraid to know the answer to. And the question was, did we survive the crash?
And that's a big one.
That's a big one. And, you know, I feel like at some point we could draw the similarities between this show and Lost, because we know, you know, this is what pissed me off the most about Lost, is that in the very first episode, Jack says to Kate, we're all dead.
Well, there's a big cliffhanger drop.
Damn it! In the first episode, he said it. I didn't have to watch these 6 years and be driven crazy by questions that will never have an answer.
Right.
So I am praying that the powers that be learned their lesson from Lost and will answer questions. They don't have to answer them right away. They can
stream
out over several episodes, and episodes or seasons.
That's why you have cliffhangers.
But they better answer questions.
Well, what I find interesting with what you were bringing up, and I figured you were going to bring this up, that's why I didn't, about the wall, is I love that parallel, and I know we talked about it before, between the wall and Jade and the bartender. Because the nice thing about Jade and the bartender is, versus Jim, is he's getting answers. He may not like the answers that he's getting, but he's getting some answers in the sense of, okay, you asked this question. Well, we don't know where we are. But yeah, with the whole Schrodinger's cat thing, hey, if we give enough, if we make enough noise, they'll know the cat's alive. And I think that gives you hope. And in this world, I think that's what we need more of. But I just love the wall whiteboard idea. And I just love the three questions, like you said. I wasn't really thinking about if they were dead or alive.
Yeah.
But that kind of, you know, that was awesome.
Yeah. And the fact that they brought up Schrodinger's cat really bugs me. But, you know, I mean, I think you and I had discussed whether or not they were dead or alive already.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the whole thing. I mean, that's the big question. Are they dead?
Yeah.
Everybody has seen the same log. Everybody has seen everything else. But why would they be dead with monsters? Again, you could go down the purgatory lane. There's a whole bunch of reasons. This could be hell. This could be whatever. But some people are stuck. Maybe they're stuck. But all I know is that this world has not been around for that long. Because when you look at Victor, everything was painted beautifully.
Yeah.
And since Victor, it's all gone to shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just kind of an interesting take on it.
Yeah.
The other thing I can't stop noticing are those damn blinds in a knot, thanks to you.
Sorry. I noticed, you know, they stayed up all night writing questions, right?
Right.
And Ethan's asleep on the couch.
Right.
And the curtain is wide open. Did they close that curtain at night, you know, and they just pushed it open because the sun had come out? Or, you know, it's just little things like that I notice. But
so do you have any other points, I mean, or do you want to go to notes? Or
I have notes, and then we have the mysteries.
Yeah. Okay. What's some of your notes?
Mysteries.
Or notes, whatever you want to do.
All right, let's get the mysteries out of the way. So they had mentioned in a previous episode that it was cows and chickens.
Right.
And what we saw were goats and chickens, no cows. And it made me wonder if they just, if cows weren't available that day for shooting or if something happened bringing the cows in.
It's a union thing. They only work on certain days.
It could have been that. I'm not really sure. But the funny thing was we were shooting in this house that day. And that house had a bunch of goats.
Right.
And the scene called for opening up the refrigerator and, you know, the homeowner's stuff was still in the refrigerator. They had so much goat milk in that refrigerator. And then I come home and I'm watching this episode and I'm seeing the goats. I'm like, oh, they're drinking goat milk. They've got goat cheese.
Yeah, lots of cheese and lots of goats.
Yeah. So they've got the poor man's potato vodka.
Absolutely.
And here's something that if you weren't paying attention, you might have missed. There's a couple of these. So Ethan's leg is healing faster than it should be.
Right.
Right. That's where he formulates his question. He's like, you know, my leg is healing fast. And it just makes me wonder, is there someone there that's trying to help us? But it makes me wonder what's going on in this town. Has time sped up, you know, to make something, you know, move along faster? Or does the town have healing powers? Is that what the rocks are doing?
Right.
The stones? I don't know. But then Boyd asks Christy and he says, hey, do you think that there's something with these seizures? Because the Matthews boys had seizures. Sarah had seizures. Are they having a physical reaction to this town? And
right.
If you think about it, Boyd's hands, he's having tremors. Tremors could kind of look like seizures. Like
true, but seizure. He also has a history in his family of that.
Yeah, but why did it come on now?
Well,
we don't know. It started bothering his father. We have no idea. So he could be getting it. I think he even says, I thought I had more time with this or something. So at any rate, those are my mysteries. We have no notes on the monsters, but
my one other point. Oh, did you have another point? I'm sorry.
No, let's go.
You know, the one thing that I did want to investigate, and I'm going to investigate more of it. I'm just throwing it out today is the music, because there's something to this music that we need to look at. The one thing that Boyd had said was when he heard the song.
If I had a boat.
Yep, I had a boat. And I think it was the first or second episode, he had a key with a boat with the
it was a buoy.
Buoy, so it wouldn't drop. So boating is something that's important to him.
Yeah, there's something.
Box already played once before. It played Blue by Joni Mitchell while the Matthews were having lunch with Boyd.
And having a little bit of a discussion about themselves.
And then If It Be Your Will was the song that was played at the diner when the Matthews moved into town.
Mm-hmm.
Last Train to Clarksville was played when the people had breakfast.
Yeah.
And We Got to Get Out of This Place.
Yeah.
Was the song that was played at the diner when the sheriff was ringing the bell. So I know there's a correlation to it. It's just, I mean, obviously it's great placement and all this other stuff, but why is it such great placement? Who's doing this? Is it the circuits are aligned so we can get these songs? Are they trying to be helped by somebody like Ethan said? You know, I'd love to hear what the listeners think about this, because the fact is it could go in a lot of different directions. It could just be plain and simple. It's great placement. Other than maybe there's something more to that.
I think, you know what, while you were talking about it, I was just having some thoughts and I'm hoping I can put them into some kind of coherent order. So we know that the radio will spike static periodically. And we know that because Kenny says so when it happens in front of Jade. And Jade, you know, grabs on to that and he's like, all right, here's my problem that I have to solve. Something is getting in. And then we have these periodical, at just the right moment, song bursts. And everyone agrees that this just happens. And it seems like they happen at opportune moments, almost like they're part of the conversation. So here's a thought. This could be the battle between good and evil. The evil being the monsters that, you know, maybe this is some kind of purgatory. But the thing that isn't clear or that we don't know for certain is that it's not that everyone ends up there in an accident, you know, like the Matthews, like Jade and Toby, where they come in injured. You know, Donna came in with her sister. They were totally fine. It wasn't until the sister got out of the car. But maybe there's something about this being purgatory. Maybe the monsters take you to hell. Maybe there is something good that can only break through in intervals, like almost like they gather all their power together and they're just like, all right, here, this is what I have. You know?
Absolutely. So, you know,
just a thought.
No. I mean, I'm watching Stranger Things. It just dropped. So I'm thinking that the whole upside down type of thing. And you make a lot of good points with that.
A bunch of my kids are in that.
Oh, geez.
So excited. Just little girls. So excited. Well, one shaved her head. The other one didn't.
I'll tell you right now. We tried not to binge it. And that was six episodes into it. And there's only seven. And it's so addictively awesome. And to watch those kids grow up makes it so worth it, you know, but that's here nor there. We're still talking about From. Do you have any other notes or points about mysteries?
Oh, stuff. And you mentioned it before, but I just want to put it on the official list. As far as like how everyone comes into it. So everyone enters from different parts of the country. This is reiterated. Different roads, different places. They see the same tree and the same crows. So that's all I have to add about stuff.
Awesome. Why don't you do some news from the sheriff? And actually, the news starts out with the sheriff.
Okay. All right. I just have to scroll down because Google Notes doesn't let me pull the thing down on the side for some reason. Oh,
I want to go up.
All right. So it was announced that Harold Perrineau will be in the following shows: The Dancing Bull, When We Were Pirates, The Best Man, Final Chapters. And that's a TV series. I'm assuming the first two are movies.
I don't know that much about them. I was trying to find a little bit about it when I was looking through it, but it's nice to see that, you know, he's getting some extra work and he's killing it on this.
Some time off.
Well, you know, I mean, the guy's a working actor.
Yeah.
I think I was watching Actor Studio years ago, and I forget, maybe this was in a movie, but they're like, they were talking about, well, actors are always out of work unless they're working. So as soon as their movie's done, they're an out of work actor.
Yeah.
So yeah. So what's the next one?
All right. Sean Majumdar, who plays Father Khatri, he is going to be in the TV series Something Undone. I think I've heard of that, and I think I want to watch that. Looks like a movie called Look at Me, another movie, All Lit Up, which is a short, and another short, Polly the Pen.
Oh, wait, those last three are from Bob Mann. He's the one that played Frank, the one that died.
Oh, yeah. Okay, got it.
That's okay. We'll just, I forgot to put the space, folks. So, yeah. So
yeah, that's why.
Totally my fault.
So it's Bob Mann who played Frank, who's going to be in Look at Me, which is a film, and then two short films, All Lit Up and Polly the Pen.
And he's actually known for being a comedian. So this is not exactly, From is not exactly his normal bag of tricks. So it'll be interesting to see if you're looking for more of Frank to do that.
Although comedians make good villains.
They do.
It's almost like those are the opposite sides of the coin.
Absolutely.
All right. So how about some listener buzz?
Let me see. Listener buzz. And we only had one piece of listener buzz.
What?
And that is from Mr. Greg. Lizzie and Alex. Okay, Sarah's a fucking psycho. I get it. being put in this position can mess with your head. Even if you aren't getting extreme painful messages from your arm, followed by seizures. Well, now I've written all about that. Okay, Forrest. It seems like maybe she's being tortured, not necessarily psychotic.
I don't think she's psychotic. I think she's being tortured.
I think she's just having a really bad day. Don't get me wrong. She lets them into her head, but I'd really like to know what the backstory is. And yes.
Wait a minute. See, that's it. If you think about it, it sounds like she was with an abusive boyfriend, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the kind of stuff, this is the world she knows. So it maybe she came from an abusive home life, went into the next person she was involved with was an abusive boyfriend, then leaves him, and Nathan's too nice. So she's ripe for the picking for these things to tell her to do evil stuff.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because Greg goes on to say, it seems like she has been in an abusive relationship that Nathan saved her from. But that could also be an unreliable
narrative
coming from her viewpoint.
Yeah.
Okay. He goes on to say, if I was locked up, being tortured and possibly being tempted with freedom, there's a chance I might start breaking a little too. And the advent of Frank in the box, because that's always good to have a Frank in the box.
Yeah.
I sure as hell wouldn't tell anybody after I got the first people killed.
Yeah.
But that said, well, yeah, no, I could see that. They knew about the box. It's just that was the first time Frank actually was the first time they ever used it.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, I am liking Jade more now, even if he's still an insufferable prick. I'm interested to see what he's doing with the CB. Now that he's inspired by the bartender, whom I like. I like the Schrodinger's cat reference, especially with it being a little bit more mainstream media in the last 15 years. And although the anger is warranted on Jade's part, it doesn't seem just destructive and not, where am I? I just
lost. Oh, not constructive.
Oh, not constructive at all. Trudy is creepy. That's on point.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if she's a bigger part to play in the future. Curious about Boyd's big swing is also where did Victor go? That's a good point.
After Oh my God. I can't believe I just remembered this now. I saw a faraway tree in the forest today. And I took a picture. All right, continue.
Okay. And because, yeah, now I went hiking today on a side note as well. And all I'm doing is looking around and I'm like, there's trees down. There's trees everywhere.
Yeah.
Are the trees closing in? Are they going farther apart? And I can't say anything to my daughter who's seven because she doesn't have a clue what I'm talking about. Yeah. But my wife is like, I'm like, honey, this is a little like From, isn't it? She's like, yeah, thanks for ruining this hike for me.
Yeah.
he goes on. After being threatened last episode, you would figure we would check in on him. I know, but I think we'll probably get some more of him next week. And
oh, yeah, probably.
He'll probably have to do something with Nathan to make Jim pissed off. Lastly, the question about Tabitha asking on the wall, did they survive? Yes, it seems too early for a reveal like that. I'm holding, you know, hopefully he's holding his water. And the rat in the maze eating the cheese comparison made me give more credence to the possibility that the town is being held in a pen, or at least a hamster cage, sort of. Looking forward to your thoughts. Greg. Well, Greg, as always, you give us the best feedback, and you give us a lot to think about as along with the listeners. So, you know, I'd love to hear your theories on a couple of those questions. And I know you've kind of laid them out, but I love the rat in the maze with the cheese. Hopefully, like you said, they're not being fed and bred for these monsters' entertainment, but we'll just have to find out.
I wonder what the monsters talk about. I wonder if they just have like a group think.
Possibly.
Or if they strategize at all.
Maybe they just like drinking the potato alcohol at night.
I wonder if they like those ones better.
Maybe they like them with the alcohol in them. The people with the alcohol versus the other ones.
Maybe it's kind of like a chicken dinner.
Maybe. You never know.
If they've had potato alcohol and or vodka, and then, you know, they've got the fresh meat, it's like meat and potatoes.
The possibilities are endless.
Yes. I mean, who's the vegetables?
All right. I think it's time for us to wrap this craziness up.
Oh, that was my line. So if you like the podcast, hit the subscribe button and give us 5 stars. And you know what? You know what 5 stars has in common? We have 5 fingers. So 1 star for every finger. Also, if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com, which I could not say last week.
Well, that being said, if you love the show or like the show, Podcastica has a whole bunch of other shows. Their flagship show, obviously, is The Walking Dead cast. And I know Rima and Paik are starting up Stranger Things on Strange Indeed. Today, or I should say this Friday, was a big day because we had Kenobi drop at 12. And then you waited 3 hours later and Stranger Things dropped. So I know I didn't get any sleep on Friday night. I was so pumped for both of them, and they were so awesome. And I can't wait to hear the podcast on that because it's just a lot to unpack with those.
Yeah. Yeah. Just FYI, finishing up Better Call Saul tomorrow night. I'm sitting on a panel with Jason and some other folks to rant, and it is not going to be good. This is ranting to the nth degree about Fear the Walking Dead.
And yes, that rant is for the Patreon subscribers, because Jason didn't want to cover the whole season. I know there's some other people that are covering it. Are you guys covering it?
We're not. We're ranting.
Yeah.
Like, it was just kind of, maybe it was groupthink that Jason was like, hey, you know, I'm doing some ranting about Fear. Do you want to jump in? And I'm like, I got plenty of ranting to do, because it started out where I told Kim I wasn't sure I was going to come back for the seventh season at all and podcast.
Right.
And then I relented and I did it, you know, because I know Kim likes to do it. And we didn't even finish the season. I was like, this thing sucks so bad, I can't even do it. And I really disappointed Kim, and I felt really bad about that. I just could not bring myself to write notes. I couldn't bring myself to watch it over so I could write the notes. It was horrible. So then when this season started, she was supposed to start with somebody else, and they just ghosted her, which really sucked. But I was like, Kim, if we can just bitch about it for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes or something like that, I'm all about that, because I really need to get the frustrations out. I'm still going to watch it, but I can't lie about it. I wasn't lying. I was cheerleading, like hoping for the best, like, oh, come on, you know, this was a sucky episode, but this was good or that. I'm like full on, everything sucks.
I watch it because I'm a completionist, and and I think I just like pain. I know there's a couple of podcasts out there that are doing it. I know our friends from Aim from the Head are doing it. And there's a couple other ones out there that are, slugging through that. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, all the shows that are on Podcastica, cause we're doing the, they just finished Moon Knight. They just finished Better Call Saul. Yeah. They just finished, Ozark. A rewatch of Ozark. So there's a lot of good stuff that can keep your head back in the game. And
there's better things to listen to.
And when you get a show like this that has great writing and great acting, you can't not want to go run and watch the next episode.
I know. I'm stopping myself. I am enjoying it so much.
I know. And that's like the next thing. My wife was really mad at me because we ended up podcasting a little bit later, and she's like, can we watch the show on Friday? I'm like, no, we have to wait. So anyway, next week we are covering season one, episode 6. It's called Book 74.
Ooh, and speaking of books, I just released my fourth book in the Lizzie's Lost Girls series.
Yeah. So
I'm super excited. And then I was supposed to go on and continue with my Salem Witch Trials, because I just have to get that fourth one out. And I heard David Bowie's Suffragette City.
Right.
And started on book 5.
You're too much.
It's out of order. Like, this was not the plan. But a character was born in the nail salon. What can I say? So that's our show. Thanks so much for joining us.
And thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week. But you might want to get home, because the bell's going to start to ring and you got to get home before dark.